Kindle pass me.
We just discussed about how we can serve our parents and still and be together with our parents in a dham. And
perfect.
And that's
even if you're married or unmarried.
Yeah, yeah. It does not specifically say that if you're married or unmarried. But how would you define a dham? Isn't your own house where you worship and you do seva for Bhagwan also considered a dham? Or is there some different concept to it?
Of course, this word, which you probably know much better than I do, but this word dham is a Sanskrit word. And like any word in almost any language, it has so many meanings and inferences of meaning. So dham means abode. It means abode, it means home. It means many things. Place, idea, means shelter, means many things. But there are different potencies and different powers of different places. And for example, there's some type of geographical phenomenon, many geographical phenomena around the world, which are practically inexplicable. But one that's very well known and observed. It's a location in the Atlantic Ocean, and it's east of the island of Bermuda. There's an island called Bermuda over by America side, Florida, going there. And out there in near that island, there's an area, a triangle, and it's named after that island because it's the closest major island. So it's called Bermuda Triangle, and it's a particular longitude. It's just a longitude, and it's not something to touch. You can't see it. It's just everywhere. It's Atlantic Ocean, but from this so many degrees northwest longitude to latitude to this point, like sometimes in the old days in land they say, oh, the border of your land is that big neem tree. And then and the north side, there's a neem tree, and the south side, there's a peepal tree. So you draw a line between those trees, and that's your property. So a line between these three points, it makes, like you said, it makes a triangle. Now that triangle, in that area, that airspace, above, and that takes in the airspace, then there's water, and under the water, then there's earth below the water. So from the very bottom surface of the earth, all the way up to the ionosphere and that Bermuda Triangle, that area of air, space, it's suicide. If you're flying in a plane and you fly over there, all your instruments go cracked, your radar, everything. And then you lose control and you crash. And if you're going in a boat and you go there, you sink. So in all the navigation maps, that's why they have a captain and a navigator. Navigator on the airplane, navigator. The word navigator comes from Noka. Now, even on the plane, they call it a navigator. he's with the maps and the computers and everything, the airport. So this is a phenomenon. This means that this place, Bermuda Triangle, has some kind of invisible power. Either there's a bunch of boots or prates or you know, yakshas or who knows what. I've heard this, you know? Maybe many other places like that. And I remember there's one place, there's a phenomenon in America, or maybe near deserts, I don't know. One place near some deserts, it's called quicksand. It looks like sand, like rate. But it's a little bit like when you make in a blender, you churn up some icing or some thick milkshake or some. So it just looks like kind of moist sand. If you walk, you start walking there, it just kind of engulfs you. You just sink into it. As soon as you step on it, you just sink and go down, you're finished. So that's more, it's the nature of that area of the earth that it swallows you. So that's not so mystical or invisible, that's a danger area. So now what I'm establishing by these discussions is that the power of a place. And here's an invisible power. You can't see the power, but it affects your airplane, you crash. You can't see the power, there's no waves. It's not that your boat's going like this, peaceful, no way, no taranga, no waves, sinks. So that means there's some power, invisible, extraordinary power, to destroy an airplane, to destroy 500 people or whatever. You got me? So now, that means in different places there's different powers. So if you go to a Shamshan ground, there's power there. There's a lot of power there. The power is Bhutas and Pretas and all kinds of tamasic beings. So those people that do Tantra and deal with Tamagun, the manipulation of Tamagun and trying to get favor from those subtle beings, they go to that place which is surcharged with Tamagun to communicate through mantra and tantra and other things, to communicate with those beings and become possessed by them or become empowered by them. That is not, you know, we don't. So then there's some other place called a temple or a mosque or a church or whatever. So that place is surcharged with spiritual vibrations, the chanting of mantra, the incense, and the ghee lamp, and there's ghee and incense and fire. There's fire there and water. There's pure water there and pure fire there. And then there's mantras and everything's clean. So that's sattvic. It has a certain power. People say, oh, yes, when I go to the temple, I feel peaceful. I mean, if it's not a crowded, not monkey vihari. I mean, it's a normal temple with, you know, one pujari and five deities. Normal temple is 10 deities and one pujari in a big, big room. And it's all a bunch of black money from some industrials. They built a temple somewhere. So then you sit there. I remember the most peaceful place, the best place to chant japa when you were in some city temple was to go to the nearest Catholic church. Mm-hmm. I was Catholic anyway, so I had my birthrights. So I'd walk into the church, and there's one or two bums, poor people, sleeping on a pews, and some poor people, and then maybe somebody really suffering, praying, and then you would have statues there, because they believe in statues, so they have statues of Jesus and Mary, and I remember chanting japa and looking at Mary, and after a while she became Radharani, you know. I just felt like I was in the temple looking at Radharani. I mean, you know, just a little like maybe crazy, but that's the way devotees are. I mean, it's very beautiful white marble. You know, it was from Italy or something. You know, it's not from Rajasthan because it's American. It's probably from Italy. Beautiful. I mean, beautiful carving. Probably carved in Italy. You know, Italy's famous for that. I still remember this day. Once I went to Bombay, and my friends, they wanted me to stay at their house. And I said, where's the nearest church around here? Because they lived in a Bandra or something like that. And it was called St. Mary's Church or something. It was a huge place. It's on top of a hill, Bandra. Bandra. Car or Bandra or somewhere like that. Bandra. So then, and they said they went to school there. I mean, they're Hindus, but they went to some Catholic school. I said, I'll go over there for a while. So I went over there, and it was beautiful. And it's because it's Indian Christian temple, you know, or church. They had a brass murti, Ashtadhatu murti, and it was only Mary. Because it was St. Mary's Church, or whatever, something like this. And it was Ashtadhatu, and fantastic. Radharani was like this, you know. And she is about 5 feet, you know, she's about 5 and a half, big murti. And she was dressed because in India, the priest or whatever, so they put that string guard, everything. Beautiful. And this is only about 10 years ago. I was in there, I was just looking, and I couldn't believe it. Because, you know, the eye of the devotee sees his Ishtadev everywhere. I mean, at least in the murti. I mean, seeing everywhere, that's like the Siddha saint or something. He sees God everywhere. I'm not anything like that. But at least anyone, ordinary person, go to the temple and say, that's God. This is Gopal. Anyone, without being some big mystic yogi or whatever. So I went there and I saw, I was marveling. I was just looking at Radharani. And I was just standing there and I said, well, I guess I'll sit in these nice, comfortable seats. So I was sitting there and I was just looking. I just started seeing, now I'm in Govindaji Temple in Jayapur. I'm looking at Radharani. All the different Radharanis I've ever seen, I was seeing them all in her. Then it was totally quiet in the place. You could hear a pin drop. And then out of some corner nearby the altar, some priest came out. And he came out. He must have been watching me from some hidden place, you know. He just came out. And it almost looked like he was floating in the sky. You know, he just kind of, you know, it was so quiet. I didn't think anyone was there. He came out and he came right over to me. The Indian guy. But he's a Catholic priest, you know. And he said, what are you looking at? I said, I'm looking at Radharani. I mean, for you it's Mary, but for me it's Radharani. And I said, I used to look at Mary when I was, and I tell him, I said, I was a Catholic. I was also an altar boy. I wasn't a priest. I used to be assistant pujari to the priest. So you can see, so whether you're living in the Dham, so you're asking, what's the Dham? So this is Dham. So you can be in your house and you have no deities, or I mean, you have a deity in your heart all the time. And the more you remember that deity in the heart, Hanuman had a heart. Hanuman, you know, monkeys say he didn't have a mandir. He's a monkey. Of course, he's half man, half monkey. And he speaks Sanskrit also. not ordinary personality. Shri Hanumanji. But it's not, as we say monkey, we think of these little Vrindavan monkeys steal our glasses and steal our pocketbooks and cell phones. So it's not even fair. He's not a monkey. He's a Kim Purush.
Yes.
Kim Purush. There's different subtle beings in world which are described in Veda. One called Kim Purush, one's called Kinara. And there's Gandharvas, Kinaras, Kim Purushas. There's many type of beings. So Kim Purush, why they say Kim Purush? Because Purush means human being, Purush. Or sometimes it means man, like Purush, Purushottam, Sri Krishna. Prakriti and Purush. So Prakriti means energy, but it means person, it means person, it means man, it means like this. It's a Purush. And then Kim means what kind of. So when any human being from this planet would see a celestial being from Kim Purusha Zaloka, Kim Purusha Lok, he would say, what? He would look and say, looks like human being. Two legs, two arms, and very much looking like human being. And also speaking. We're from Devalok, or even in ancient India, people spoke Sanskrit. And he's speaking to me in Sanskrit. But what kind of Purusha is he? He doesn't look like a Punjabi. He doesn't look like like one of us, like an Indian or a Russian. Because he has maybe some features, funny jaw, funny hair on his body, something looking like monkey. But that in the Shastras, they don't ever translate the word Kim Purusha as monkey.
Yeah.
So in our own cartoonish mentality in Kali Yuga, we say that Hanuman was a monkey. And it's depicted like that for different purposes, not to denigrate him or to relegate him to some subhuman category, because he's by no means is he subhuman in any way, in form or in character or in his spiritual position. He's a nitya, eternal associate of Lord Ramachandra. But the whole idea of of Hanuman, is to show that even everyone can be Krishna's devotee. Hanuman is apparently, he's a Kim Purusha, but he's apparently looking something like a monkey. He's not looking like the residents of Ayodhya. But we find in the Bhagavatam, that's in Treta Yuga of Hanuman, and then Jatayu. Jatayu is an eagle or a bird, and he's a great devotee. So then we have, that's of course in Treta Yuga. In Satya Yuga, we have Gajendra. Gajendra is an elephant. And was a king in his last life, became an elephant. And when he was eaten up by the crocodile, he started speaking in 8th canto, chapter 3. There's a bunch of prayers by Gajendra. Then chapter 4 is Gajendra Moksha. Vishnu liberated him. And you must have heard Gajendra Moksha. Sometimes when a mother or father die, then the pujari will come in your house and he'll do some puja and he'll read Gajendra Moksha. And the children take a sankalp, oh, Panaji, please recite this Sanskrit, and may the shuti fall and the benefit of this prayer go to my mother and father so they get liberated, putra, they get liberated from Pitriloka. So this is a very powerful prayer. It's mentioned in Garuda Puran that when someone dies, you should chant this. And it's also mentioned in Kartika Mahatmya and other places. Anyone who chants the Gajendra Moksha prayers of the Bhagavatam, he will get liberation in this month. We just chant Hare Krishna, meditate on Radha Krishna Leela. And worship Radharani. But so we're already liberated in one sense. But this is description in the Puranas about some good thing, good activity and seva to do during Kartik, or especially on Ekadasis or Kartik, or when someone dies. It's recommended. I mean, there are many, many upakyas and many stotrams and many prayers, but almost invariably it will say, read Gajendra Moksha. Apparently it's a very... So there we have an elephant. And he remembered the Sanskrit shlokas, he chanted them, and Vishnu came and saved him. He got liberated. So So back to the verse. So the dham, what is the dham? The dham is all the things that you're saying are correct, wherever you are. But when you live in wherever you live, this dham, because there's, in India they have something called a tirth. There's a tirth and there's a dham. And oftentimes the terms are mixed up so much they lose their individual definition. So sometimes they say Pushkar Dham, or they say Pushkar Tirth, or they say Alalabad Dham, or they because it's not very clear. Just like there's another Sanskrit concept, or word rather, called Jayanti. Our Goswamis and Sandarvas, Jiva Goswami has written, and he's quoting from other Puranas, that the word Jayanti is only for Krishna. There are many forms of Bhagavan, many great saints. Now it's Gita Jayanti, Hanuman Jayanti, Ram Jayanti, everybody Jayanti. You know, Ambedkar Jayanti.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The Jayanti. You know, the Jayanti means this is the ultimate zenith, the ultimate conclusion of all glorious events. Jayante. Jayanti. Jayanti. So there's nothing more glorious or nothing more grand than when Swayam Bhagavan, Sarva Avatari, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna manifests in this material world. This is a grand and amazing thing. It only happens once in the day of Brahma, that Krishna comes here, once every 1,000 Kali Yugas. So multiply 1,000, 464,000 years. One Kali Yuga, 464,000. So once in the day of Brahma, but the day of Brahma also includes Satyuga. So the day includes its Chatur Yuga. So one day of Brahma means Satyuga, and that's like three times as much as Kali. So that's like 1.3 million years. And then there's Dwapara, which is originally Dwapara and then Treta, but then it switched. So then Treta Yuga is now become, it's three times that. It's like this. So it's like 3 million years or so. 3 million years, one kalpa, right? Four Chatur Yugas, four Yugas. So 3 million times 1,000. It's 300 million or billion or miles. My brain can't go that far. So one time and 310 trillion years or whatever it is, Krishna comes to the earth planet. And after him comes Lord Chaitanya, propagating Nam Sankirtan and Brajabhav and Gopi Bhav. Very, very rare. So when you, this word is for only Krishna Jayanti. So similarly, Dham, what is Dham in our Shastras? They say that is, Dham is the place where Bhagavan comes and displays his intimate pastimes with his eternal associates. So that actually means Dwarka Dham, Ayodhya Dham, Braja Dham, Mathura Dham, Vrindavan Dham, Orkya. Or in the other case, in different forms of Bhagavan, that Mayapur is actually mostly, it says Navadvip. I mean, Mayapur, is all the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mangal, everywhere. You find generally in ancient books about Lord Chaitanya, they talk about Navadvip Dham. You can't even find the word Mayapur in the whole CC in the Bengali, or Chaitanya Mangal, or Chaitanya Bhagavat, or Murari Gupta's biography. It doesn't exist. I mean, for ISKCON, it's a big thing, or Gaudiya Math, but not Navadvip, which is that area. So these are Dhams. But the words are all, as we said with Jayanti, they're all used all Haridwar Dham. Haridwar is a place to get mukti. There are seven cities. There are seven muktapuras. Muktapuras. There are seven cities in India which have that power. They're not dhammas, but they're called tirths. Sat tirth. And Mathura, sometimes there are two things in one. Because if Mathura is a dham, but if you die in Mathura, you also get liberated. So that's a tirth. So Kumbha Ujjain tirth and Nasik tirth. But some other people don't like to say, it's harder to say, it's easier to say Dham than say Tirth, Tirth, T-I-R-T-H, so whatever, I don't know. So this, the Dham is a place of Leela. So when you come to the place of Leela, if the Bermuda Triangle can sink a ship and crash a 747 airplane, how much power there is in Krishna's Dham to promote your bhakti? So that's why the Shastras say that if you do seva outside the Dham, you get one time benefit for seva. You do seva in the Dham, it says you get 100 times the benefit. Maybe some people say 1,000, but I was told by my teacher, he read somewhere, and he knows, so I can't remember, that it says 100 times. And then I asked my teacher, I said, I've heard, because I've been here a while, and even when I was just visiting here from 77 till I moved, they said, oh, you know, staying in Vrindavan is very good, and, you know, it's like trying to, before computers. Before their computers, you try to work, you know, sell stocks at home, or you go to the stock exchange. If you go to that office in Bombay, Mumbai, or maybe, I don't think even Delhi has, go to New York Stock Exchange, that's the place to see the whole world, and futures and stocks and gold and what's going on, oh, and then you can really make business. So it has the power, there's a certain power there. So this power, when I asked the teacher, he said, it's not true that offenses, you get 100 times the reaction for offenses in the Dham. That's not true. There's nowhere in Shastra, although it's been said and maybe written here and there. It's not that you can say that's wrongly said or wrongly written. That's just, it's written as an exaggeration. Like Mother Yashoda, she used to tell Krishna when he was little, and he was playing. And then, you know, and little kids, they scramble all over the place. And she, when they were in Nandagram, and by, of course, by the time they were in Nandagram, Krishna was 3 years old in Gokul and 3 years old in Chatikar, that's six. So he's, you know, like seven to 10 or 12, he was in Nandagram. So even as a young boy, but sometimes he would wander all over the place, maybe. And he would sometimes wander at night, you know, in dusk, because his mother doesn't know about his, you know, parallel lives. You know, when he goes to sleep, he goes to sleep in the bedroom. I tuck him in the bed, I kiss him, and Krishna goes to sleep. And there's two guards at the door and some coward boys. But then Krishna goes to sleep, and then he locks the door from inside, and there's a little trap door, he goes outside and goes to the Rasalila, dances all night, comes back, and Mother Yashoda says, oh, you look so tired, and you're scratched, and you have some bite on your lip. What happened, you know? And those boys, they wrestle too much, you know? So she said, she warned them. She said, listen, if you you have to come back by dusk for your dinner. You finish the playing and swimming in Pavan Sarovar, and you come before dark. Because if you go in the dark, there's some boogeyman, some they'll catch you, and it's this big black man, and he has big teeth and yellow teeth, and he'll put you in a bag and run away with you, and he'll take you away. And then Lala said, "What are they called?" She said, "Habalau." She just made it up. Well, Habalau. Habalau. Yeah, oh, so you watch out for the Habalau. So then he was, okay, I'm scared. Yeah. So I think these things were written in it by sometimes here and there to warn as a warning and to scare the devotees to be careful. Because it's not written anywhere, but Mahajans may say like that, like, be careful. Like, don't go out there, or this is going to happen. Maybe it'll never happen. But you know, to protect our children or create fear in them, sometimes we may stretch the truth or whatever. So it's not necessarily wrong. But the point about the danger about living in Vrindavan, you get 100 times the benefit for all your practices, but it's not you don't get 100 times the reaction. But rather, the danger here is everywhere there's a Takraji, and everywhere there's a Damvasi, and everywhere there's a Yatri, or and everywhere there's a devotee. So if you offend a devotee, if you offend a devotee, or you offend a Brijvasi, not only Brijvasi human being, but monkey, dog, cat tree, etc., then you get the reaction of Vaishnava Parad. Because we were hearing last night from our teacher that Jiva Goswami says, I don't know, I can't recall, but he says in the Sandarvas, I think maybe in Bhakti Sandarvas, Bhakti Sandarvas, did you trace out the source? I'd like to ask you. You know the source? I'm going to run it by the other teacher and see if we get the exact Google finding. You know, we know it's there on the map. We got, how many degrees?
Fine-tuning,
exactly. That's what I meant. Fine-tuning. Because maybe when Bob, this other Bob, it's 99, maybe his little slight dullness may come. But considering how much sharpness there was. At any rate, so there in Sandarvas, Jiva Goswami is saying that not only, that he said everyone born in the Dham and everyone living in the Dham is a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, Krishna's devotee, even a dog, cat. And he said we should not be hateful to any living entity. We should not be hateful to any living entity here, and we should not be angry on them. And we may have a lot of causes to be angry. Like I can't believe that the consciousness, I mean, at least up until today, the consciousness of Brijvasis is In one minute, they're cursing the monkeys. I mean, not the Hanumans. I mean, the real monkeys, the Bandur. They're cursing them and say, oh, they're getting, and at the same time, they'll feed rotis to the same monkeys. So this is the consciousness that the Dham, I've lived outside the Dham for 12 years as a devotee in temples, which are sanctified places, and not only in temples, but in living in a deity room with the deities as a pujari. Sometimes I was doing the service all day long and waking them and noon artik and the whole nine yards and putting them to rest. I mean, actually living with God. And that's pretty extraordinary experience. And so that whole experience, the purity of it all, the intimacy, all the power of it all, the benefit of all, does not match one day living in Vrindavan. So this, you say, what you are trying to say, I do my bhajan here, I do my bhajan there. It's not, it's like there's a 1 kilo piece of iron on this side of the bhajan thing, and the other side there's 1 carat, 1 gajar. So what's going to happen? The gajar is going to go up, and the loa is going to go down. It's only 50 grams. So that's the comparison. Because bhajan is the same, Krishna is the same, you're correct. But the power of the place, there's the power of the place and the power of the people in the place. So there's two things you're plugging into here. You're plugging into the electricity and the Wi-Fi at the same time. You're plugging your computer in to run it, and you're plugging into Wi-Fi to get on the Maya net or whatever, Krishna net, depends on how you want to use it. It can be Krishna net or Maya net. Maya means Maya Jal. In Bengali, Maya Jal. Jal means net. Maya Jal, the network of Maya. Sharira Avidya Jal, you're ISKCON, you know that we have this prayer. We say, Sharira Avidya Jal. Jal means network of ignorance. You know, it's a network, it's all this way, this nerves, that nerves, this ignorance combined with goodness is just a big network of Maya. So it all costs, the more time you can spend in the Dham, that will promote your cause more. Many people, including myself, because I often went out and preached, and I'm chanting my rounds in Delhi in my room with my Giriraj. He comes with me, and I'm chanting. And then I have a nice experience of the holy name and wherever it takes me, wherever the holy name, wherever they take me, not it, wherever they, the holy name, they take me. And I come to Vrindavan, and it's, okay, here we are, same Giriraj, you're there, and I'm here. The two players are here, Premashraya, Premvishaya. Now I'm doing my mala. But the experience, the feeling, the experience, the revelations is 100 times different. And the ease of it also. It just rolls off. What to speak? I'm in India, but just going to Delhi. What to speak? Imagine like people that come from Russia, they do bhajan, and then they go back there. You know, I'm finding a difference between one part of Dharma Bhumi and another part of Dharma Bhumi. India is Hastinapur, Indraprastha, that's not a Dham, we call it a Dham, but that's a play. Well, it's a Dham because Krishna was there with Yudhisthira and having pastimes. That's Hastinapur, Dham. Well, their place is Indraprastha, Indra. Yeah. Hastinapur is the other. Achha, Indraprastha is Haryana.
Indraprastha is Delhi, and Hastinapur is more of.
Yeah, Hastinapur was the Kauravas, and the Pandavas were in Indraprastha. That's why it's called Indra. Indra is the father of Arjuna. And. There's a big forest there too that belonged to Indra actually, and Arjuna burned it down for Maya Danava. Maya Danava means daitya, you know. Maya means, you know, master of illusion. He was a magician, Maya Danava, and he was living in the forest, maybe in some subtle form, I don't know. And then I think it was Agni on the forest belonged to Indra, or maybe Agni. No. Yeah, the forest belonged to Indra, and so somehow, I'm a little rusty on the whole pastime, but Krishna and Arjuna were going off a ride, and they entered that forest, and then Agni asked, he asked for a donation of that forest. Agni means he burns it up. So then he asked Arjuna, because he's the son of Indra, but Agni's afraid of Indra because he's his boss. But Agni wanted to eat those herbs inside the forest or something. Maybe I'm kind of making my own Mahabharata here, but the basic idea is there. The players are right, and the place is right, and the scene is right. So then And Arjuna said, okay, I'll make a pact with you, and then I'll go and I'll burn it down, because it's my father and he won't mind. It's easier to get forgiven than it is to get permission.
Yeah.
Indra burned out the forest, Agni came and ate it all. I mean, whatever, consumed it all and got what he wanted. But living in that forest is Maya Dhanava, and he approached Indra, he said, listen, Arjuna, he said, please, I'm going to burn up, please give me shelter. So Arjuna saved Maya Dhanava. He's a tantric, a Maya. So then he said, okay, I know many tantric arts, I'll do you a favor. So then he made the assembly hall for the Pandavas. The water looks like land, and then Duryodhana came there. Oh, I don't want to get my silk dhoti wet. He had a nice silk dhoti, like all zigzag, you know, and little gold on the borders. You know, he's a king, you know, it must be like really. And he, oh, it's water here. So he picked it up, you know, like some lady. Duryodhana's like... massive guy, you know, and everyone's watching. Oh, Duryodhana's arrived. Oh, yes. And then the ladies of the palace, you know, Kunti and Draupadi, everyone watching, you know, the arrival of Duryodhana, who's like cousin, brother, whatever. So then he's like, and he thinks it's water, but it's land. He goes, ah, and he goes, ha, ha, ha. And then they were laughing. And Yudhisthira told everyone, hey, be quiet, choop, choop, you know, don't laugh. You know, a king, nothing a king can't bear is being insulted or, you know, laughed at. You know, this, you don't do that. And he said, okay. And Krishna looked at Draupadi and Kunti and said, you know, one of those Indian moves, you know, with the head, you know, you don't have to say anything. You just move your head in such a way, it means laugh, laugh, laugh. So they're all devotees, you know, Krishna. I mean, Draupadi's name was Krishna. And so Krishna is a feminine form of Krishna. So they laughed. And then Duryodhana, okay, you're gonna get it. I'll get back at all of you for this. Well, the king, when his king is like this. So Dham, with all respects, the Dham is incomparable. It's apurva, unprecedented, atulam, immeasurable. It's unlimited. It says in the Mathura Mahatmya by Rupa Goswami that just in one corner of Braj Mandal, there's 660 billion holy places, tirthas. One corner. Saraswati is here, Ganga is here, Yamuna is here, Badri is here, Kedarnath is here. Everything. What they say in Puranas, the original form is here and the expanded form is in the Himalayas, Kedarnath and Badrinath. That's why here the mountain is called Adi Badrinath. That's called Badrinath. Badri Vishal. You know, the Uparwala. You know, this is the original. Adi means original. And Adi Kedarnath. And it's in Kamban, it's on the side.